today: Twitter, Facebook, and how to handle the President of the United States. At just before 1 a.m. on Friday, the 29th of May, Donald Trump posted a message on Twitter and on Facebook that set off a chain of events the social media companies are still scrambling to deal with today. We know that the US president can be very provocative on social media, but this was another level even for him, perhaps the most incendiary thing he'd ever written, using the phrase, "When the looting starts, the shooting starts."
How would you know that phrase and not know its racially charged history?
Well, I've heard that phrase for a long time. I don't know where it came from, where it originated. I view that phrase as...
In 1967, the Miami police...
Well, I don't know. I've also heard from many other places.
It wasn't just the historical significance of the phrase that posed a challenge for social media companies. As Alex Hearn, The Guardian's UK technology editor, says, they also had to decide whether the President of the United States was using their platforms to glorify violence. One of them decided that he was.
Twitter put in place a policy that it had introduced in July 2019, which basically said if a figure of public interest tweets something that is likely to cause harm but has strong news value, Twitter would keep it up but restrict it. And so that's what it did. It put a warning on that tweet saying the tweet broke Twitter's rules. It stopped users from retweeting it, from replying to it or liking it, but it left the tweet up.
But it wasn't just on Twitter, was it? It also went on to Facebook, which is much, much bigger.
Almost all of Trump's tweets are cross-posted to Facebook. They do remarkably well on that platform as well, even if Trump himself doesn't seem to pay much attention to Facebook. So exactly the same message went viral with exactly the same degree of praise from his fans and criticism from his followers. The difference was how the platforms reacted.
What did Facebook do?
Nothing, really. Facebook didn't take any direct action against that message, full stop.
From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, why won't Facebook act against Donald Trump? Alex, Twitter got a lot of praise for restricting Donald Trump's post, and Facebook took a lot of heat for failing to do the same. Do we know how they made that decision?
We learned later that that decision had gone all the way to the top, that it was Mark Zuckerberg who personally decided in the end that Facebook should not take action on the message, "When the looting starts, the shooting starts."
What did he say about the post?
What he said was that he felt that the post that Trump had made was not an incitement to violence, but was rather a threat or a promise of state action. In other words, Trump was not instructing people to go out and shoot looters. He was rather to be read as warning looters that if they looted, they would be shot. For Mark Zuckerberg, it seemed that was the important distinction. One was a promise of state action, which is allowed on Facebook. The other possible reading was an incitement to violence, which wouldn't have been allowed. And he even did a Fox News interview defending his decision not to take it down and using the opportunity to score points against Twitter.
We have a different policy, I think, than Twitter on this. You know, I just believe strongly that that Facebook shouldn't be the arbiter of truth of everything that people say online. I think in general, private companies probably shouldn't be, or especially these platform companies, shouldn't be in the position of doing that.
He said he didn't think it was Facebook's job to decide what the President of the United States could and couldn't say on his platform.
Twitter and Facebook are clearly taking very different approaches to moderation.
The big difference is that Facebook says it believes in a binary approach. Mark Zuckerberg was quite firm about this. If something doesn't fit Facebook's platform, he says, Facebook will take it down. If it does, if it abides by the rules, Facebook will not touch it.
The U.S. has the strongest tradition on freedom of expression, but even the First Amendment is pretty clear that You know, for example, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. And the reason for that is that it puts other people in imminent risk of physical harm.
Twitter has, by contrast, a lot of shades of gray there. It has this restricted mode where if you break its rules, but in a newsworthy fashion, it will leave it up. It will restrict it. Facebook tries to rise above it. Either it's on the platform untouched or it's taken off cleanly.
I'm sort of fascinated by the fact that Mark Zuckerberg is sitting there at the desk having a look at things. I mean, I appreciate that Donald Trump's post is quite significant and one that might go up to the very boss. But just on Zuckerberg, I mean, he founded Facebook in 2004 in his Harvard dorm room. The platform has clearly changed a huge amount since then, grown exponentially to 2 billion users. What level of oversight and control does he have over the company now?
Total. He is the owner of 28% of Facebook's shares by value, but he controls 88% of the votes.
We try to be very principled. We care deeply about giving people a voice. That's a big part of why I started the company. I don't think that you build a company that gives people a voice like this if you don't believe that individuals having a voice is a good thing.
The company is built in his image. But to a certain extent, Zuckerberg is openly uneasy about this level of power. This has led to the creation of what he initially called Facebook's Supreme Court, the Oversight Board.
Couldn't the Supreme Court or Oversight Board have done something over Trump's message?
It's a quasi-independent body. And what its job is to make these difficult decisions that Mark Zuckerberg doesn't want to make. Unfortunately for Mark Zuckerberg, it doesn't yet exist. The first 20 members of the board have been named, including former Guardian editor-in-chief Alan Rusbridger, but they are not yet in a position to discuss specific moderation decisions, they say. And so, in this case, the buck stopped with Mark.
It's not normally Zuckerberg making final decisions on what stays up or not. How much control do Facebook moderators tend to have?
The moderators of Facebook, of whom there are tens of thousands, regularly complain about being treated like human arms of a machine. They are told the opinions they have to have, and although Facebook has published its community guidelines, it's always been very reluctant to publish specific rules in the detail that they're given to the moderators. Those rules go into depth about sort of how much cleavage is too much, which specific flags around the world are symbols of hate and which are not. All of these are listed in excruciating detail. The job of the moderators is to look at a post, match it to those rules, and use their human judgment to work out which rules to apply and move on. They work for third-party contractors around the world, and they are not full employees. They work with typically tenuous employment contracts, and they say that that work is at best extremely stressful and at worst causing mental health issues. Finally, that toll has started to be acknowledged. Facebook settled out of court in California after a lawsuit alleging it had caused post-traumatic stress disorder for putting its moderators through this work without enough support. It settled and agreed to pay out. Similar cases are ongoing around the world. It's becoming very clear that, as one moderator put it to me earlier this year, this is the factory floor of the 21st century, and we have not yet invented health and safety there.
And right now, presumably, these moderators are working alone from home, as you say, many of them in kind of precarious roles, and presumably seeing a lot of distressing content in the wake of George Floyd.
They are. I spoke to some moderators last week about precisely this. They are seeing endless repetitive videos of police violence, of horrible violence against protesters, against black people around the world. All of the problems of fake news, of misinformation come out to play as well. So they're also seeing historic videos of violence against police ripped from protests, videos of people burning alive in a protest gone violent that has nothing to do with the protests in America, but is being shared and flagged and put in front of the moderators.
How have Facebook employees responded to Zuckerberg's decision not to censor Donald Trump?
With anger, really interestingly. Facebook has a healthy internal culture of dissent, but it's internal. The company operates a product called Workplace, which is basically a locked down version of Facebook that only Facebook employees can post on. And on Workplace, there are constantly debates about what Facebook is doing, about the state of the wider world, about politics. But everyone in Facebook has to sign a non-disclosure agreement. It's also deeper than that. It is quite hard as a journalist to report on Facebook because they don't talk about what happens inside Facebook to outsiders. In the wake of Zuckerberg's decision, the normally internal dissent moved outside Facebook. A number of employees went on Twitter and posted very similar messages about how they were disgusted by the lack of leadership, concerned that Facebook was no longer a moral force for good.
And on a rival platform.
And on a rival platform, which, you know, the symbolism is important there. Facebook employees arranged a virtual walkout, marking themselves as unavailable for work. Facebook then sort of tried to co-opt that. The company issued an official statement saying, "We welcome people disagreeing with management and no one will be required to take unpaid leave to do this walkout." But it didn't actually stop the public anger. It didn't please its employees. Facebook employees started quitting and citing this as a reason for quitting. And they've not stopped publicly complaining several weeks on now.
The response from within Facebook about the Black Lives Matter movement became very heated. One of the engineers who was vocal in his criticism was sacked, Facebook said, because of the way he publicly attacked a colleague. This hasn't just exploded for Zuckerberg inside Facebook. He's also under a lot of pressure from outside. He runs a non-profit organisation with his wife, the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, and over 140 scientists who get funding from that have attacked the decision on the Trump post. Last week, Zuckerberg and Chan responded by saying they were deeply shaken and disgusted by Trump's divisive and incendiary rhetoric. That doesn't change the decision on leaving the post up, but it does show that they're clearly rattled by this. What has Zuckerberg done to try to protect his reputation?
Zuckerberg has been on a harm reduction tour for the last 2 weeks. He has spoken to civil rights leaders about his decision. That didn't go well. They issued an excoriating statement after, saying that they felt he'd taken absolutely the wrong decision. Technology news site The Verge got hold of an 85-minute town hall with employees where Zuckerberg discussed this issue in depth with his staff. Some of it was conciliatory. So, for instance, he did say that the company would consider imposing restrictions on Donald Trump if civil unrest escalates. He basically said, there is a line. Zuckerberg also said on that recording that he had spoken to Trump personally, but that the phone call only happened after he'd already decided to leave the post up. He revealed that Maxine Williams, Facebook's global diversity officer, was involved in the final decision about whether or not to take Trump's post down. She's a Black employee. Zuckerberg also committed to donate $10 million from Facebook to groups fighting racial injustice. He has encouraged employees to see defending free speech as a noble cause. In other words, he's trying to lay down his case, which is that he's not defending Donald Trump for the sake of defending Donald Trump. He's defending Donald Trump for the sake of free speech. And he also brought up a point that's become slightly controversial, but that Facebook keeps doubling down on, which is to claim as a sort of victory for Facebook the fact that the original video of George Floyd's murder by a police officer was posted to Facebook and that that was the flashpoint for these protests. It's true that that video was posted to Facebook, and I can see why Zuckerberg would consider that an important point in favour of free speech. But at the same time, it's worth noting that if sort of Samsung ran a press campaign saying, we make the camera that shot this video, we would think that that was a deeply odd campaign.
The New York Times has described this as Mark Zuckerberg's biggest challenge yet. What do you think?
I think it is in part because Donald Trump has placed Facebook in an impossible position and one which the company could otherwise have skated across without ever really addressing for decades to come, which is how how does Facebook use its astronomical power in situations where it shouldn't really have that power in the first place? The way Facebook hoped this would go is that no one would notice that Facebook has the power to meaningfully affect how many people hear the words of the President of the United States, because that's deeply weird if you stop to think about it. Any normal president, it wouldn't be an issue. Any normal president, it would be accepted that it is probably on balance a good thing for democracy if Facebook hosts the words of the democratically elected leader of a country. But Donald Trump is not a normal president, and this situation is not normal. And so what this has done is it's exposed for Mark Zuckerberg the impossibility of his position in trying to be someone who really, really, really wants to not be held liable for things that are on Facebook, and really, really wants to just be seen as someone running a place where people can come together and have a community. Zuckerberg wants to give the world an enormously powerful tool for communication and not bear any of the consequences of that. He wants the act of creation of Facebook to be seen, and the continued running of Facebook, to be seen as a fundamentally neutral act. When what we're seeing is that refusing to act is not a neutral act.
Coming up, despite taking no action against Trump, Facebook could still be swept up in his retaliation attack against Twitter. Alex, while all this is happening, Donald Trump has reacted furiously to Twitter.
I think you shut it down, as far as I'm concerned.
His deputy chief of staff used a tweet to attack the company with very rude language. But it's not just turned into a war of words. The president has signed an executive order to limit the laws that protect social media sites from being sued.
How would you shut down an American?
I don't know. I'd have to ask the lawyers. I'd have to go through a legal process. If it were legal, if it were able to be legally shut down, I would do it. I think I'd be hurting it very badly if we didn't use it anymore. I mean, we have other sites we could use, I guess.
If that comes into play, it wouldn't just hurt Twitter, would it? It would hurt all social media sites, including Facebook. Tell me about that executive order.
The executive order attacks Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which is the clause that allows for free speech on the internet. What Section 230 says is that if you run a website, you are not legally liable for the material posted by your users. Before Section 230, websites had to make a decision. Either they could attempt to be a conduit, they could put up anything that anyone posted, and they could say, all of this is the work of our users, we cannot be sued. Or they could take pure liability. And what that meant was, if you performed any act of moderation, you took on the liability for everything your users posted. It was clearly an unsustainable state of affairs, because even simple things like spam fighting were not possible if you were going to allow people to post a film review that might end up being libelous. And so Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act allowed for platforms to not take on legal liability of their users. Trump attacking it doesn't make much sense, because what Trump would be doing is attacking the law that allows Twitter to leave his tweets up without being sued for them.
I'd have to understand what they actually would intend to do. But in general, I think a government choosing to censor a platform because they're worried about censorship doesn't exactly strike me as the right reflex there.
If Section 230 was removed, then you can guarantee that the first thing that would happen is Twitter would have to become much more aggressive in moderating anything that anyone could sue it for. But in the long run, it's more easily seen as just an attack on the technology companies in general, an attack on the internet. It seems likely that any attempt to enforce his executive order would be thrown out by the courts. But what it says about his intentions and his belief of what should happen to free speech on the internet has worried many.
And while all that is going on, he's continuing to post questionable material.
Yeah, so Donald Trump sent another tweet cross-posted to Facebook in which he just asked whether or not a 75-year-old man who suffered a critical head injury after being pushed to the floor by Buffalo, New York police may have been actually a provocateur for anti-fascists running some sort of mysterious scanner over Buffalo police before deliberately falling harder than he needed to. The conspiracy theory obviously had no evidence and was rapidly traced back to OANN, a far-right American TV channel. Again, it's prompted another wave of demands that Twitter and Facebook take down this post, which people fear could cause real harm to this man and his family.
Okay, so more brewing headaches for social media sites on how to deal with Trump. Zuckerberg has clearly been stung by the backlash he's faced over all of this. How damaging do you think it is in the long run?
I think it means that Facebook's efforts to be above it all are coming to an end. For a long time, Silicon Valley was seen as a hotbed of liberalism. It was seen as the natural thing for internet companies to be left-wing. Facebook sort of led the charge away from that, attempting to mark out a position, not even in the political center, but outside of politics. The company wanted to provide services to everyone and to not be seen as ideological at all. In America in particular, there is no such thing as politically neutral. There is no such thing anymore as above politics. I don't think it will be as big or as serious as Cambridge Analytica. But if Facebook continues to be seen as an accidental or uncaring ally of Donald Trump in its actions, if not its intentions, I think that could be a perception that will stick for a long time.
Alex Hearn, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
That was Alex Hearn, The Guardian's UK technology editor and a regular on Today in Focus. Do read his stories on this and have a look back at his previous episodes on whether Facebook is spying on you, the power of Google, TikTok, and more. We went to Facebook for a response to this episode. The company said it is improving its policies and that it encourages employees to speak openly. It says it offers support to its moderators as well as private healthcare and is developing technical solutions to help limit the amount of objectionable material they have to deal with as part of their jobs. That's it for today. I hope you're enjoying Today in Focus. Huge thanks for all your great tweets and reviews. Also, thanks to those who have voted for us in the British Podcast Awards Listener's Choice category. If you haven't yet, go to britishpodcastawards.com/vote. We really appreciate it. This episode was produced by Hannah Moore. Sound design was by Nicholas Cox. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.